Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Landing at the Fort Lauderdale Airport, I couldn't wait to leave the plane. My health and the health of my family were at stake. The burly, late-20s fellow in the seat in front of us was ready to punch at least one of us in the nose. His problem was that our adorable 18-month-old son, who traveled like a trooper, spent the whole two-hour flight talking. Short of a muzzle, how could we protect against that? What should parents know in order to make travel with children an enjoyable journey? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our show today will be packed with helpful ideas for travel with children, because our guests have done it both professionally and as parents. Helena Koenig is the owner of Grand Travel Agency, booking trips for grandparents with their grandchildren. She is the mother of five grown children and has five grandchildren as well. Welcome, Helena.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Rebecca Collenberg is a freelance travel writer and the mother of three girls, ages 5, 7, and 9. We're glad to have you with us, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We want to ask both of you, first of all, why is travel good for children?
Travel is good for everybody. It gives you an opportunity to meet new people, see new things, taste new food, hear new sounds, in general, to learn.
Travel, I think, for children is particularly good because it's so educational. And for kids, everything is new. They don't necessarily realize that there are people who speak different languages. Kids are very self-centered, young kids in particular. They don't realize until they see it that there's all different kinds of money. There's all different kinds of foods beyond the ones that they're familiar with. There's all different kinds of people. There's all different kinds of languages. So I think for kids, the realization that there is a world beyond their own little world is tremendously educational and fascinating.
Even just within the United States, architecture and geography and the way people dress and speak varies a lot.
Exactly.
Rebecca, what are some recommended ages or age levels for certain types of trips?
Well, when you have a baby, people think that's a terrible time to travel. But I know families who've gone to Europe, couples who've taken their baby and put them on their back and in a backpack and traveled all across Europe. So I think when you have a baby, in some ways, you don't really have to restrict your travel as long as you've taken necessary health precautions. Once your child is walking and starts to assert themselves a little bit, I think we're talking more about the preschool years, once they hit age 2 or 3, that's when you really have to slow down. That's when you really want to maybe take a step back from some of your more distant travel and say, well, maybe if we just travel, 2 hours from home, that would be a good thing. We can go to a museum. We can go on a hike. We can go to a monument. Then once your kids are beyond that age, once they gain physical strength, once they can walk far, once you don't need all the equipment, such as strollers and bottles and half of your belongings in order to get out of the house, then your kids can come with you to further places that are further from home. I would say once a child is around 8 or so, they really have the stamina. They really have the physical energy necessary to be able to walk through museums, to be able to walk through gardens, to be able to make their own way in the airport and not have that be exhausting. So once they hit 8 or 9, I think their interest level as well as their physical energy really put them in a position where they're ready to really take on more rigorous travel.
In the case of grand travel, we take children between the ages of 7 and 17. We divide them by the age group of 7 through 11 and 12 through 17. Actually, the best time to take a child, in our opinion, is when the grandparent feels able to do it. If the grandparent is able to cope with the child, then the child is the right age.
Good.
That's an important
Good
point.
Thought. What kinds of destinations do you recommend for families traveling with children?
Anything that has to do with natural phenomenon appeals to both generations. And that's the basically most important thing to think about in terms of traveling with children, is that you or the grandparents have to be as interested in the subject as the children who are traveling. If you participate with the child in the experience, they're going to learn and enjoy it.
What are some examples of destinations?
The most popular destination Grand Travel has is Kenya. We do an African safari, which is ultimately exciting for all generations at any age. It's pretty hard to minimize how exciting you feel about a lion getting his dinner for his family or her family. It's a pretty exciting experience at any age.
Now, what about destinations that are a lot less expensive but exciting as well or interesting as well?
Within the United States, we do take people to Alaska. We take them to Washington, D.C., to the American Southwest, to the Western parks in order to experience ranches and frontier experiences and how the West was settled, gold mining. In the American Southwest, we teach the importance of water and how hard it would be to farm and live in an arid desert climate. And up in Alaska, of course, that's the last frontier we have in the United States, and you see very minimal kinds of experiences and very native lives still in operation and existence. So there's a lot to learn all over at any price in any age range.
Helena, what arrangements are necessary for travel with children that are different from travel with adults?
In the case of grandparents and grandchildren, we want grandparents and the grandchild to study the destination together, to talk to each other about where they're going, to find out what would be helpful in school, what experiences the grandparent has had with that destination before the trip. Are there friends in the community that they can write to before? And then we need these companions to find out about each other. Who takes the first shower of the day? Do we keep the light on at night after we go to bed? Are we going to read at night? Are we going to have to eat everything on our plate? These issues have to be resolved or should be talked about between the parent or the grandparent and the child. Traveling is different than staying home. And things don't just happen. You have to make them happen.
Rebecca, how can parents prepare for a lengthy car trip with children?
People have to keep in mind that some kids travel very well. Some kids are happy to sleep in the car. Mm-hmm. Some kids hate the car, just like adults. Some adults don't mind traveling. I know my sister, if she goes more than half an hour, is ready to get out of the car, whereas you know, I can drive for 5 hours and still want to keep going to get to my destination. Parents know their children, and before you take a trip, should sort of estimate, you know, do you have a preschooler who really, it's a torture for that child perhaps to sit still for more than half an hour, or do you have a child who falls asleep the minute they get in the car? If you have the latter, then you really don't have to do much preparation. If you have the former, there are several products. There are a lot of handheld electronic toys. There's a lot of different sorts of cards, games. There are, as most of us know from our childhood, a lot of word games, things like 20 questions. There's also a tremendous opportunity, I think, to teach your kids a lot about travel, a lot about geography while you're traveling in the car. One game that we play is the good old geography. We play, you have to come up with different places, and the kids learn all about that. Or you can apply that same game. You can play carography, where kids have to find different kinds of cars on the road. You can play peopleography, where kids, you know, name different people. And the last, say, a name ends with a G, then you think of another person you know with a G. I think there's tremendous opportunity in the car for parents to creatively think of ways to entertain kids. People who have a little more educational bent can do math problems. That's another thing. Sometimes we practice math problems in the car, and the kids like it. They don't like to just sit still. So whether they're using their hands or whether they're talking, there's always tapes. There's a lot of excellent car tapes. And I know some people have even resorted to putting VCRs in their vans. I've seen that. I don't really think that's necessary. I think there are plenty of ways to entertain your kids in the car without resorting to that. I think that just as there were 20 or 30 years ago, sort of the low-tech ways of kids being in the car for long car trips to grandma's, Same thing applies now. You know, talk to your kids, tell them stories, ask them questions. It really can be a blessing to have a lot of time together in the car rather than a curse.
One thing that works is to change their clothes. Children don't stay in their jeans and t-shirts for 16 hours or 12 hours or whatever all the time. I would not bring pajamas, but I would bring something like a sweatsuit so that they just get a tactile feeling of the change, different shoes, different clothes. And another fun thing to bring is a costume, so that they can have some imaginative play while they're driving along. Another thing on long trips is to keep track of arrival expectations, like we're supposed to be at a certain point by 3 o'clock. Do we make it? If not, why didn't we do it? What happened? To have sort of a journal of what's happening. If you go on a train, it's very easy to do it with a timetable. The train is supposed to be at a certain station by a certain time. Did it get there? If not, you know, what do you think is the reason? Some of the other things are throwaway cameras. Most of the time you're going on these long trips because you have a destination in mind, grandma's house or something. So you want to keep a journal of the reason for this trip and how it worked out. And they will participate with their own thoughts to be diaried, so to speak. And then you have something to read, and then the next trip is something to look forward to because now we've read about what we did on this one.
I would just add to that to tell parents not to be discouraged if your kids do start getting upset and fighting with each other in the back seat. That is completely to be expected on any kind of long car ride. I read an interesting article by a newspaper reporter who decided to take a year off from his job at a prestigious newspaper to drive with his family up to Alaska. And a lot of his colleagues thought he was nuts. Why ever would he want to do something like that, you know, take a year off from his job? And his response was that he felt like he had been working so hard and such long hours that he really missed hearing his kids fighting in the back seat.
Funny. Some families I've talked with have read plays. This goes along with what you said about the costumes, imaginative things that people can participate in depending on the ages of the children. And I saw on television one time an example of a woman who prepared lunch bags, and each, they were brown lunch bags, and they had big numbers on them that she took a magic marker, 1, 2, 3, and they were for a certain number of miles. Once they had gone 50 miles or 75 miles or whatever, they could open bag number one, and in it were jump ropes and snacks for the first place that they would take a little break. And the second one was every child in the car got a koosh ball to throw and play with, and they could have some activity. And those were also stopping points they could either just use to go to the bathroom or get out and run around the car a few times, or they could look forward to what was in the bag. Are we going to get raisins? Are we going to get cookies? Are we going to get, you know, some kind of toy to play with? So it's good to have the surprises.
I think the significance of what we're all saying, too, is that cars can be a place where we can interact as a family, and people who put on the VCR or put on the tape may be losing an opportunity to really have some interaction with the kids. I've noticed in my family that kids are much more apt to talk in the car than they are just in general. And so it's a good time to share some things, stories or concepts about things that the kids might be thinking about and want to talk about. So we found it's a really good interactive time.
As kids get older, too, they get a little more sense of a distance. If you say to a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, we'll be there in an hour, the kids, they really have no sense of that. You have to say, you know, we'll be there around lunchtime, or we'll be driving for as long as the time that you're in preschool. You know, it's good to give kids sort of some sense in a way that they can understand.
A frame, you know, of reference within their own experience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because one time we were on a vacation and I said to, you know, I think my daughter, she must have been about 3, she had no clue of how long we were going. Well, we had just gotten out of our neighborhood. And she was, are we there
are
yet?
We there
it started.
Very often we would give maps to the kids. They would each have their own map, and the map would, you know, theoretically be appropriate for the age of the kid, but they could take a magic marker and chart where we were going to go, which made them have sort of ownership of the process. How should parents prepare to travel by plane or train with children?
When we took my son on a plane, we lived in Boston, we were traveling to Washington, and he was 2, And he spilled the very first drink that was handed to him, which was less than half a cup of water, all over himself. He was soaking wet. I did not have a change of clothes in my carry-on. That was something I should have planned on with a small child that I just didn't think about. I learned very quickly. But we got moved to first class because there was nowhere else they could see us.
Perfect.
Dry.
That sounds like it worked for you.
They wrapped him in a blanket and moved us to a dry seat.
Something that I think works well for little kids, and when I say little, I say, you know, from maybe 3 to, you know, even up to 7 or 8 or 9. If they haven't been on a plane, dramatic play is very fun and can be very educational. So at home, you can say, okay, you know, instead of playing house today, we're going to play airplane ride. And then, you know, the child might be the passenger, and one of the parents can be a flight attendant. And, you know, you can go up to the child and say, oh, can I get you something to drink? Or, I'm sorry, you have to sit down. But kids love dramatic play. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they can really sort of gain a preliminary understanding of some of the situations that may be scary for them if they don't have any kind of preparation. Same with a train. You can say, okay, all aboard. We're getting on the train now. And you can make sort of a whole little skit about it.
My kids used to play train with empty cardboard boxes lined up in the family room. And they would each one would have his box to sit in, and that was his seat.
I think one of the things you might have to explain is the volume of other people that you're going to be surrounded by, that also there are delays that are very real possibilities, especially by plane.
I used to have a bag that just went on airplane trips with us, and it had in it, among other things, one of those old-fashioned metal Band-Aid boxes that the Band-Aids had come in, but in it we had little toys that they didn't see for a very long time until we started pulling these things out of this travel bag. After the experience with the spilled water, we had a bag that always went to the plane with us, and it had clothes, and it had toys, and it had raisins, and it had packages of crackers and things, which I didn't pull out unless they were needed. But I felt better having that bag with us.
Rebecca, what sightseeing pointers do you think parents should keep in mind?
Parents tend to overestimate when it comes to kids the attention span that they have, as well as the amount that they need to really have a memorable experience. If you have a small child, say you have a 5-year-old, well, if that child goes to one military battlefield, say you're in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, your inclination may be, oh, I want to see all of it. I want to go to the wax museum, and I want to go to the battlefield, and we want to go to the cemetery. We want to see all of this in one day. Well, for a child, if they go to one of those things, if they go to one wax museum, now that to them is a very new experience. That's very exciting. It's less stressful for them and ultimately for you if you spend 2 hours in one place as opposed to feeling like you have to get so much in. The advice I would give to parents of young children is to slow down. Go to one outing, have a snack, take a break, have a picnic, and if you have time, go to another one. Don't overschedule. When you have older kids, I would say let them have an opinion. Let them voice their opinion on what interests them. You might have a child who is fascinated by, once again, battlefields, but who couldn't care less about museums. Or you might have a child who's very interested in art, but has no interest or very little interest in, say, a science exhibit. So I would say give them some voice in what they can see.
Helena, what should parents know about children traveling alone? There are situations
where there are very stringent rules about children traveling alone. They have to be taken to the point of departure by an adult, and the carrier, whether it's an airline or train, whatever, has to know who is going to meet them at the other end. A child traveling alone depends, again, on the age, what orientation they need and how much they should be given, how long they should be on a plane or on a train, how long the experience should be. You have to know your child very well and be able to explain what's happening. You cannot count on somebody sitting with your child and taking the role of babysitter, guardian, or parenting for you just because she's adorable or he's brilliant or whatever. I mean, it's a huge responsibility to be sending a child alone.
Rebecca, are there health precautions that parents should take when they're traveling with children or maybe even before a trip?
Absolutely, and I'm sure Helena knows a lot about this as well. When kids go overseas, especially young children, I think the main thing you want to think about is immunizations. If they're traveling to a country that, you know, may have certain diseases that are not present here, you definitely want to be sure that all their immunizations are up to date. That means sometimes that you might have to really plan far in advance. Some immunizations will take a while to really take effect. You might have to have an immunization 6 months before you travel. You want to be sure that any child who has any special health problem is also taken care of before you go and that you have access to medical care upon arrival.
Are there guidelines that parents can find out about what immunizations that they need to have their children receive?
Absolutely. If they talk to their pediatrician should know what immunizations are necessary. There are also a growing number of travel health specialists. There are certain doctors, either they're gastroenterologists, because a lot of the problems overseas tend to be stomach-related, as well as other doctors. In most major U.S. cities, there are certain travel health services which employ experts in this field. It is a growing field. Unfortunately, there are a growing number of parasites or diseases. Because people are doing so much international travel, I think more and more people are getting interested in it. But, of course, you know, you have to be careful with the water overseas. You have to be careful with what you eat everywhere, but particularly in foreign countries. When you're in the U.S., it's a good idea if you're going to a city where you are, you know, not staying with relatives, to get a sense from your pediatrician either of how to access health care in that particular city, or just to be sure before you leave that you know how to access your own medical care. Can you use your HMO card in another city? Can you call any doctor? Do you have to notify your pediatrician if there's an emergency? Can you just go to the emergency room? So it's definitely worth having a conversation with your pediatrician or with your healthcare specialist to find out how to access medical care when you're out of town.
And I think we want to add the reminder, make sure everyone in the family has whatever prescription medicines are supposed to have along with them.
Another thing to add is the issue of food. Nothing will make ruin your vacation faster than your child not being happy with what he has to eat. I know that we all are guilty of the sentence, but you're in a new country and I want you to try the cuisine, right? Your child does not want to learn about gourmet meals at 7 years old or 11, all he wants to do is eat what's familiar. Now, if you want to have a good time, it's up to you to see that he is satisfied with the food that is comfortable and familiar to him. Especially internationally, you've got 5, 6, sometimes 9 hour time change that affects their system as much as it affects yours. A vacation is not the time to educate children about gourmet meals.
Another thing that you want to be sure to do when you pack is to pack a little health bag. It seems like an obvious thing, but a lot of parents forget. You know, your child feels fine. You're thinking about the bathing suits and the clothes. You're not really thinking about, you know, a thermometer, Tylenol, Neosporin, Band-Aids. Those are things that when you need them, it's nice to have right there. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any information that our listeners could access with regard to traveling with grandparents?
Yes, we do have a brochure which we would be happy to mail to anybody who calls us. We have a number, 1-800-247-7651. We also have a web page for those of you out there with the World Wide Web. It's www.grandtravel.com.
Now that we're all ready to pack and take off, we'd like to say thanks to Helena Koenig and Rebecca Kallenberg for your advice and suggestions, which will make travels with our children much easier for all of us. We have a gift for caller number 3 on our listeners' poll, an autographed copy of Dr. T. Barry Brazelton's new book for children, Going to the Doctor. To answer today's question, coming up next, please call us at 1-800-791-8573 and give us your response. What was your most successful trip with children and why? Again, it's 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you Dr. Brazelton's book and to use some of your comments on the air. So please leave your name and phone number if you would like us to call you back.
If you have other comments, questions, or suggestions for Parents Perspective, you can use the toll-free number 1-800-791-8573 or email us at parentsper@aol.com or contact us care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.